Hello. My name is Scott Rose. I work for the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We're a federal agency. We're under Department of Commerce, if anybody cares to know. This is going to be a little talk about the deployment progress in .gov. .gov put a stake in the ground and said that we're going to deploy DNSSEC, and this is kind of how the progress lasted and how we did it. What I'm going to cover here is how we did the deployment drivers in the U.S. government. Being the government, we are a loose collection of autonomous agencies that have an overriding policy handed down to us. So the knowledge, you know, it spans the whole gamut. We have some small agencies that outsource everything to a single provider. We have people that do everything in-house, and we've got everything in between. How did we do with the deployment? Just to cut right to the chase, it wasn't very good. And so what did we do to try to address those problems? We'll talk about that. And what kind of errors that we saw? What did we see what people were doing when they were first trying to deploy this? And what did we learn from this that we could probably pass on to other people? Any other kind of like large organization or even community of interest that's looking to deploy DNSSEC that at least has a single or agreed upon policy can hopefully take some of this to heart. And again, this won't be a talk about how DNSSEC works or how awesome it is. That's a whole other subject. The drivers. Well, back in 2008, people may remember in August, Black Hat, Dan Kaminsky gave his famous talk about DNSSEC and the DNS problem, the spoofing problem. I didn't actually mention DNSSEC at the time, but that was listed as one of the full solutions to it. And that got a lot of people's attention. I mean, the community had known about this for years, but this kind of really got people's attention because what else you could do with it. At that same month, the Office of Management and Budget, that's OMB, issued a memo saying, you know, all federal agencies, or the executive branch anyway, that they have the power over, is going to deploy DNSSEC, and it listed two deadlines. The first was in January of 2009, the .gov TLD itself would be signed and accepting key information from delegations. And second, everybody else, all the other agencies, had until December of the following year, or the December of that year, 2009, to deploy DNSSEC. Looking back, that was incredibly ambitious, probably a little too ambitious. But we thought, and we kind of almost see this in the V6 deployment deadlines as well, that we're going to stick a stake in the ground and, you know, gosh darn it, we're going to go for it. DNSSEC was later added, or at the same time, was kind of added to a similar channel called the Federal Information Security Management Act, FISMA. Some of you may be aware of that. If you're not, to spare your sanity, I'm not going to go into the very gory details. Basically, it's an overriding security policy for all federal information systems. It's a whole bunch of thou shalts sort of thing. Like, you must do this, you must do that. Again, so how do we do? Not very good. The .gov TLD itself was signed in the February of 2009, so it missed its deadline by a month, which was for a TLD starting from September to February when it finally deployed. It's actually pretty good. So, I mean, they deserve a lot of credit for that, or the current operators at the time. However, that December, we had less than 30% of agencies and zones, actually, the whole raw number of zones, failed to meet the deadline. They did not deploy at all. So we had less than a third compliance. And of that third that was signed, or less than a third that was signed, the error rate was extremely high. At any given day, 10% or more were bogus. They would not validate. That wasn't a problem, I guess you could say, because not too many people were doing validation. Comcast wasn't doing validation at that time. Very few people were. Then they worked around it, or they did they tried to get somebody's contact number and try and actually fix that problem. But these error states, they kind of lingered for weeks. Keys would roll over, but they would forget to update the DS information in the parent. Signatures would expire, and they would stay expired for weeks at a time until someone actually called somebody or sent an email saying, hey, by the way, your zone is expired, your DNSSEC validation is failing. And it was all done, you know, word of mouth by email, which didn't scale. Of course, what was the challenges? Why were we having so much problems? In DNSSEC, as you may know, time is now a factor, real absolute time. A lot of agencies, the DNSSEC was the old fire and forget. We'd set it up once and we never touch it again, especially our external facing zones. There's a web server, there's a mail server out there, and they never change. But with DNSSEC, now you have to constantly re-sign that. Even if you're not changing the zone information itself, you have to go back every now and then. But then we also had overarching federal key management regulations that said you have to change your keys every now and then. So there's another operation that needs to be included and worked into normal operations. There's increased parent-child interaction. This goes not just for .gov, this goes for anybody deploying DNSSEC. You have to get your key material up to your parent zone. How you do that depends. But most cases, when it's a TLD, you're going through your registrar, and it's usually some sort of web portal. The same for .com, .net. .gov, it's the same. We have a single registrar. It's another agency called GSA, and they have a web portal. You log on, you get this nice little web form, you enter in your key material or your DS set, and hit done, and a few minutes later, bop, it goes. But somebody has to have a login. Somebody has to remember that login. And there was a lot of cases where it was some contractor who had the login because they were the actual technical point of contact, who then left 6 months, 8 months later, and nobody knew what the login or password was. They couldn't change it. So they had to go through the help desk and get everything sorted out. Again, all these operations take time to learn. And in some cases, not a lot. It required either new equipment. Some agencies invested in new equipment, some sort of appliance, some sort of networking appliance that just slid into the rack that they could hopefully automate a lot of stuff, or even a service change. Their current service provider didn't offer DNSSEC when they asked, so they had to go to somebody else. And another thing that happened, which isn't in this, is we had a lot of consolidation. To use NIST and NOAA, for example, they're widely distributed, especially NOAA, a widely distributed agency. They've got little offices everywhere. Or each little operating unit had their own DNS guy. They had their own DNS zone. They had a delegation under NOAA.gov. Or same thing with NIST. There was a lot of individual labs and divisions had their own DNS operations in-house. When FISMA and the DNSSEC mandates were handed down, they decided to kind of roll that up into a single agency, usually at the top. So a single group of operators would control the entire domain. They control all the sub-delegations. They were still kind of managed at that small level, but they'd have to go through that central organization to make any DNS changes. And that way there'd be actually one group of operators who was responsible for the entire agency's DNS infrastructure. That was a double-edged sword. You'll see the good, and then you'll see the bad of that as I go on. But here's the operational flow. I sometimes use this for people that aren't too familiar with DNSSEC. The first part here doesn't actually work. But the first part of it, like the NIST, the internal operations, that's all internal to the organization. That's your re-signing, your some of your key rollover stuff. All that is done in-house, and a lot of that can be automated because all this is done at a routine scheduled set. So all that can actually be done, a lot of automation, and we actually had a lot of automation done. Some of it was simple, like simple scripts. So some people bought the appliance. So that would control that part. You edit your zone data, you push it through your signer, and your signer pushes it out to your authoritative servers. You know, it's pretty simple. It's this interaction. Once you start going across organizational boundaries, that's when things go crazy. You have to get your key material up to your parent. Somehow through your registrar. It's usually a web form, but you have to do that somehow. So there's a human in the loop there, and so there's always that. And again, same thing with the .gov TLD itself. Their operator has to push up their key material through the IANA registrar to get it into the root zone. So again, that's kind of the operational flow for those of you that are just kind of deeply aware of DNSSEC, and that's where the problems were. So to address lagging deployment and these failed audits that kept on going on and on and on, in April 2012, there was what they called the DNSSEC Tiger Team was formed. It was chaired by DHS, somebody from DHS, and had volunteers from all other agencies. NIST, we originally joined as a volunteer agency because we had done DNSSEC and we had written the deployment guidance and things like that. Later on, we were elevated to co-chairs because we were foolish to say yes. But they met once a month. They had conference calls to kind of discuss deployment roadblocks, saying, why aren't you guys deploying? What are your problems? We just kind of had an open forum that was once a month over the phone. And they also, on the side, they actually funded training material through we have a virtual training environment. It's called it's basically webcast training classes. And DHS actually funded for one of these for DNSSEC to be produced, and it was online. So any government agency operators could go to this site and view this material for free. They developed a monitoring tool. It was called Test DNSSEC. It's actually on SourceForge that they were going to run. That DHS, who was tasked for compliance, actual policy compliance. They funded this tool, and they had it developed, and they would actually run it, and they would produce monthly reports for CIOs and weekly reports, kind of aggregate reports for everybody, and they would send those out to all the agencies. And all that monthly report that went to the CIO said, here are your zones that we know you have, and here's their DNSSEC status, either yes or no, and here's the problems that we've seen. Again, looking back, sending it just to the CIO may not have been the best, because the CIO oftentimes would look at this report, because it was in a stack of 100 reports that they got that month, and if they remembered about it, they would send it down to the right guy to get something fixed. It probably should have gone to the point of contact as well, the actual POCs of that zone, so they would actually get a copy of it at the same time, so they could actually start working on it instead of hearing it through the grapevine or through the chain of command. But that's what they decided to do. And as a kind of a support for that, NIST developed an in-house kind of mailing list for DNS operators. Anybody with a .gov or .mil or a contractor that was directly supporting one could join, and it was an open forum. The reason why we kept it just to .gov and .mil instead of just sending everybody to one of the ones that already exist publicly is because a lot of .gov admins were kind of hesitant to describe their internal operations publicly, just to secrecy, or at least also just a little hesitant. So they wanted something that would be kind of govies only, a little gov club. So we just formed that. It was basically a gov only version of the DNSSEC deployment or DNS operators mailing lists or anything like that. But the Tiger team had a very significant impact. You can see right here. The first black line was when the Tiger team was formed. Okay, the Tiger team was formed, and then a couple months later, the actual monitoring and reporting was actually started. So that's why it took a little lag. I put the second line there because you'll probably ask why there's a sudden jump. It's because actually us at NIST, we got a better list of .gov domains. So that's why both of those numbers jumped up. Interestingly enough, the green line represents signed and valid. That means we see signatures in the zone, we can validate it from a validating recursive resolver. Red means it is unsigned. And yellow means it's either signed and there's an error, or it's signed and it's an island, so we can't validate it. Interestingly, that number kind of remains constant throughout. They aren't all errors. Some of those are just islands, and that's a usual progression. Is you'll see an agency sign their zone but not upload their key material for, say, a month or so in order to just kind of test their own internal operations before they go live. It's usually... For the .gov community, it was seen as like the final step, the coming out party for your DNSSEC deployment was to upload your key material through .gov web portal. and so that's why you'd see like this almost constant little undercurrent of islands. And this is where the consolidation comes in, especially that jump. That's because we had a list of agencies, obviously, so we had their front page. Their zone that they used, but a lot of agencies have their own little vanity plates for specific projects. For instance, NIST, we have NIST.gov. We also have Fire.gov. Yes?
Are these just the federal .govs, or are you also including the state .govs?
This is federal. And actually, it's federal executive branch with a few legislative ones, because actually those are the ones that actually the OMB mandate applied to. The OMB mandate and FISMA doesn't apply to states, local governments, or native sovereign nations. They're eligible for a .gov delegation, but they don't have to do DNSSEC. Now, some are, but they don't have to. So this is just federal executive branch. And actually, you can get the list. The list is now on data.gov. That's the single portal for all... a lot of government information, data sets. So this is on data.gov. So we actually found a whole bunch of these little project pages, and all those were part of a larger organization. Again, here's the consolidation part, is where an organization would deploy DNSSEC and they'd sign all their zones. And so the number would jump up a little every now and then, because one agency that had, say, 25 zones would suddenly sign them all. And that's why you kind of see these jumps. And again, it's going nicely. It's still continuing. As of today, we're close to 70%, 75%. We still have some that are unsigned. A lot of the smaller agencies that may not have the resources or like outsource everything to a provider, they've gone to their provider and said, hey, we need to do DNSSEC. And the provider says, oh, we don't do it. So they're kind of lagging behind. Those are most of those cases. But then here's the errors that we've seen. I chose this little segment of time from August to March, just to kind of demonstrate kind of the downside of consolidation. As you can see, there's a bunch of different errors, and they kind of go everywhere. The dark blue is called no SIGs. What that means is the no SIGs I've declared to be, we're monitoring all the zones. And when we see a zone is signed and chained, it has a DS record in the parent, but we look in the child zone and we don't see any signatures, we say, you know, no SIG. That's usually an operational error. You've updated your zone, but you forgot to sign it before you pushed it out to your authoritative servers. And that's, you'll see that. That's not a very common error, but you'll see these sharp uptakes, and again, that's the downside of consolidation. When one agency has an error, suddenly 25, 30, 40, 50 zones will suddenly go bogus because they're all centrally managed. The biggest one in the red is expired signatures. This is, you signed your zone, you have a valid, you have a key in .gov, but your signatures have expired. This is easily solved through usually some sort of automation or cron job, but yet a lot of agencies still have a human do it. You know, mark it on a calendar, this is when I need to re-sign my zones, and you'll notice that they forget, usually on important days. You'll notice some of the big spikes come at the end of November and the end of January, and the end of December to January. Everybody knows what happens during those days? Yeah, it's Thanksgiving and Christmas. Administrators go on vacation. They forget to re-sign their zones. This isn't all too bad, except, for example, a couple years ago, Medicare.gov expired at the end of December. And that's actually pretty important, because that's, you know, the end of the year. People sometimes looking at their, you know, Medicare, especially for senior citizens, and if you're behind a validating resolver, you couldn't get to Medicare.gov in December. The next biggest error we see is actually the bad KSK rollover, and that's the one that requires human intervention. I roll over my key signing key, and I'm supposed to upload that to the .gov portal, but either the administrator forgets or does it incorrectly. So there's a key mismatch. The parent gov is telling me the key is key A. I go to the child zone, the key is key B. So there's a key mismatch. It's bogus. Again, that's a little harder to automate, because that involves a human logging into a web portal. So we see that error a lot. Two that we don't see a lot anymore was the SIGs were generated prior to inception. That's a timing error. My signing tool thinks it's the future. That's easily fixed, and usually that seems to be one of the easiestly noticeable ones. And that's not... Those weren't too bad. It was often like 15 minutes or an hour. So if they signed, say, at midnight, and they pushed out a new zone, usually by the time people rolled in the morning, it was valid. So they didn't notice that for a while until these monitoring reports went out, because they were scanning at midnight. the other one was the DS points to a pre-published key signing key. That's probably a little hard to explain, but basically they were doing a key signing key rollover. They had dual signatures. They had both key signing keys in use, as you know, according to the instructions and according to best common practices. They upload their new key material, but yet their implementation stripped that signature out of that new key signing key. So when the scanner looked at it, it said, well, wait a minute, I see the DS record for key B, but I look and I see the key B isn't being used. So I don't know what's going on here. That was actually a flaw in implementations. There's actually a couple appliances that would accidentally do that. They would forget that the key, that's the new key that they should be using, and they stop using it for a little bit. That's been fixed, but it's been popping up every now and then. I think some people are getting the older versions of these appliances and not updating them. But that's one of those that we haven't seen in a while. But, I mean, we have seen it. But, again, thanks to the Tiger team, I think we've actually done a real good job at reporting and responding to these errors. As you can see, we have two columns here. April of 2011, that's when the Tiger team formed, but before the monitoring took place, this is before monitoring and reporting, and then April 2012, compare that to 12 months later, after this monitoring regime has been in place. Again, the two biggest we've seen were no SIGs and expired SIGs and bad KSK rollovers. Surprisingly small here. I guess picked the wrong month. But the time for it to be resolved were, 2 days, 6 days, 14 days, 2 weeks. And then you compare that to 12 months later, well, not only are we having fewer errors, we have more sign zones and we have fewer errors, but actually the time to fix those errors have gone down. Sometimes they're done within a day, sometimes in 2 days. Again, the good thing, SIGs prior to inception, we didn't see any errors of those at all for that month. And again, for most months, we don't see those anymore because people are putting NTP on their signing tools. But again, the reason why like bad key rollover still taking about 12 days to resolve, again, human in the loop. You got to find somebody that has the web portal login and who can remember their password, have them log in and change and update the DS information with the new key signing key. Sometimes that requires calls to the help desk, because the contractor who is the point of contact who had the login is gone, or someone's on leave and they can't reach them. So they had to actually call the help desk and get it resolved that way. And sometimes that filters up to the manager, even CIO level, who has to call in and say, "Yes, I'm the CIO. Please do this." So we are stopped getting angry reporting from DHS. So some of the lessons learned that I would tell everybody is, one, first, set up a monitoring regime. And that's incredibly easy. I don't know why NIST did this, but we didn't have any teeth because we're not a compliance agency. And it was simple. It's a little Perl script that sends queries through a validating recursive resolver for a list of zones that we got on data.gov. And we said, here's the zones that we could validate, and here's the ones that we couldn't validate, here's the ones that are signed, here's the ones that aren't signed. It's pretty easy to do. And in that way, we caught the errors before the admins did half the time. Because if you're running a signed zone but you're not validating, you don't know if you're valid or not. You see signatures, you think, oh, it's good. But sometimes it's not. They often didn't know that they were bogus until someone emailed them. And sure, each organization provides up-to-date point-of-contact information. This was also the biggest kicker, is that a lot of times, we had the point of contact database that the registrar had was out of date. Contractors move on, employees move on, things got to change. And so a lot of times we actually had to resort to email database or email our mailing lists and say, hey, does anybody know a contact in, say, like NASA.gov or NIST.gov? Who's in charge of that? And we learned very quickly that didn't scale. Encourage automation as much as possible. We've had people with simple signing scripts, appliances. There are solutions out there to do that, depending on what you want to pay, from zero to hundreds and thousands of dollars. Even service providers will do this. And that takes the easy problems out of your hands, out of your hair. Just don't have to worry about it. You got an appliance that'll do re-signing. And again, if you have the monitoring tool, you'll be able to check to make sure that that's actually running. You can get an alert. Or something like that, if something goes wrong, or something that should have happened like 3 days ago, you'll get an alert about it or something like that. That way you can at least detect these kind of easy-to-solve answers. And it also helps to kind of foster an internal community. Have it closed membership if necessary, for whatever your policy is. That way you at least have a forum for people to step forward and say, I got this problem, because chances are there's somebody else that already had that problem too and had already solved it. And that's kind of why we had to set up these mailing lists, because we had all the agencies were autonomous, and so they thought, well, I'm deploying DNSSEC, I don't know where to go. They were, half the time they didn't realize that, yeah, there's a there's a sister agency, there's another agency that had the exact, that has a, kind of the same setup they do, and have already done it, and here's, you know, their pain points, and to kind of help them along so they don't have to, so we don't stumble over the same errors again and again. So that's kind of all I have. I actually finished very early. But, of course, if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to take them. Oh.
Yeah, so I take it from this that the policy didn't require the agencies to actually use validating resolvers, or they might have noticed that their zones were broken before it took so long.
Yes, that is correct. We kind of knew it would be painful, so we thought let's solve that chicken and egg problem by saying, okay, let's everybody sign the infrastructure first, and then we'll push out deployment. And if for those that are big fans of FSMA, the latest version is going to probably drop soon, either end of December or January. And in there, validation will be made mandatory for all agencies. So, yes.
All right. Lawrence Chen, Kansas State University. Is there sort of a contact for people on the outside to contact these operators when they're domain disappears, because you can't send email to the listed point of contact because the domain is not resolving?
Yes, there is. There's actually, it's one of those things that not too many people know about outside of the government, which is sad. The registrar for .gov has a help desk, and it's registrar@.gov, dotgov.gov. They have the database for all points of contact. So you can actually send them an email, and it's run by the current operator, which is VeriSign, so it's a 24/7 help desk. Send them an email, or even they have a phone number too. Say this is the problem. They'll send an email out to the administrative and technical, or call the administrative and technical points of contact, and say, look, people are having these problems. And here's a solution. Call me. It's just tenfold better than what it used to be. Yes.
Patrick McLean, Sony Gaikai. I was wondering if you had any thought to having an API for uploading new keys, or maybe X509 sign API that people can hit so that they can automate that as well.
We have, and I know the community kind of has too. Every now and then you'll get some ideas that even certain appliances have their own implementation where they'll use like DNS notify messages, not for their always intended purposes, but as a usual like signaling mechanism. The part of the problem with that is, at least policy-wise, they like to have a human in the loop. And in fact, actually, but we have taken that out, now that I've said that. The .gov actually has now a monitoring policy where actually you can opt in if you're assigned zone. It's not perfect, because what it does is if you opted into this monitoring for your TLD, the TLD scans all the monitoring list of monitoring zones. If they see a new KSK in use, that means there's a KSK and it's signing the key set, it will upload it. It'll validate it, because it's assuming the old key is still in use, and automatically put a DS record in, and then send an email notifying saying, oh, by the way, I saw a new KSK in your zone. I uploaded it. If I shouldn't have done that, please email the help desk. That is the quick and dirty way around that right now that they've done, but not all agencies use that. They still, I guess, prefer the human in the loop, or they don't know it's possible to do that. So that's why we're seeing all these key setting key rollover problems.
So since you have a lot of these rollover problems, you're obviously doing a lot of key rollovers. What's the frequency that they're either required or recommended to do key rollovers?
There's a lot of discussion on that, but in the federal government, we have overriding key policies, which NIST kind of laid out in our special publication 800-81. The zone signing keys, your data signing keys that are all internal, those have a recommended lifetime of 1 to 3 months. The key signing keys have a recommended lifetime of 12 to 24 months, 1 to 2 years. That actually is the overriding federal policy for all authentication keys. So if you're using a key for anything, that's certs, email authentication, whatever, the maximum time you can use that is for 2 years. You have to change that every 2 years. that syncs kind of nicely with the .gov renewal policy. Just like everybody else, we have to pay for our delegations, and that's due every 12 years, every 12 months. Sorry, every year we have to pay to renew it. So the registrar was kind of encouraging operators to kind of sync their key rollovers with their payments. So every 12 months you have to log in to pay, and while you're there, upload your new key material, please. That didn't always happen, but that was kind of the goal. But yes, we have to go by federal policies. Now, individually, it's kind of up to whatever internal policy you have or want to come up with. A lot more time, so anything.
Hi, can you tell us about the appliances you were talking about? More specific.
Okay. Well, I don't want to. Don't take this as an endorsement. NIST does not endorse any product and/or service. But there are appliances out there. There's Infoblox. You know, they do all the DNS automation stuff. There's a company that only that makes only a DNS server. Well, does some other stuff too, called Secure64. That's used by some agencies. A lot of agencies actually contracted it out for an entire service, like to a content distribution network. Your Akamai's of the world and things like that are actually they have a lot of federal customers, not just for web service, but also for DNS hosting. So that is kind of taken out of their hands. There's some others. I think there's Info Weapons. Yeah, any kind of IPAM thing. There's actually some open source tools that either sit on top of Bind called DNSSEC tools. Open DNSSEC. I have to plug DNSSEC tools because that's actually a fellow DNSSEC deployment initiative member, Sparta. It's a contractor, but it's a set of open source tools that kind of wrap around Bind, and that do a lot of this automation. So it runs from free for like the some of the stuff is open source to, you know, whatever this appliance is, and it's usually a box that you just slide into a rack and power up. So I mean, it kind of runs the gamut depending on what your resources and needs are.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, I say there are some tools built into baked into Bind now. Yeah, and simple. I mean, for our own little division, we actually just wrote a little Perl script, and it works. Assuming the machine that's running the Perl script is still running. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's how. Actually, you know, again, this is the benefit of having that little inforum. One agency, an admin there who's a, you know, great guy, wrote a solid set of scripts to do a lot of this automation stuff, and he sent it to the list saying, here's what I'm using. If you have Bind, and here you go. Here's a set of scripts that you can use. And I'm sure some agencies took him up on that, and they're probably doing the same thing. Or, you know, they bought a service contract, or they, you know, outsourced, or they bought an appliance. Full disclosure, NIST actually bought an appliance. We actually were running everything in-house, but then we started consolidating more and more and more, and a lot of these security controls coming down, and we thought, you know, this is just getting a little too much to handle. Why don't we just get an automated appliance to take some of this off our hands? And it's actually helped. We've noticed a lot less churn going on at the operator level. Okay, there's my contact information. A lot of these slides, if you're interested, as well as everything else, some other material that we have is we have a kind of a DNSSEC project page. It's actually www.dnsops.gov. That's the NIST page. There's also the blog at dnssec-deployment.org. Those are some of the places to start. The DNSSEC Deployment Initiative is a DHS-funded effort, which is why you see the DHS logo down there at the bottom, that NIST is a part of, as well as some contractors. So that's kind of an initiative to kind of urge this deployment within the .gov community as well as outside. Okay, the two URLs are for NIST. It's www.dnsops.gov, and the larger initiative is dnssec-deployment.org.